multi-part series on Gittin and how it relates to Beis Din practice and some of the issues. Last time we started speaking about Sidur HaGet, the actual practice of presiding over a get between a man and a woman, which generally takes about an hour and a half here at the Beis Din of the Chicago Rabbinical Council. And we were speaking about some of the different aspects of what a Beis Din needs to be careful about. Last week, we spent a lot of time about whether you need a Beis Din altogether. And if you do need a Beis Din, what's sort of the purpose of why it's necessary to have a full-fledged rabbinical court? And we spoke about different reasons and different considerations, particularly if a get is delivered by a shliach, and the shliach has to say b'fanei nechtu b'fanei nechtam in front of a Beis Din. We spoke about how a taras nedarim has to be in front of a Beis Din, how there has to be a chakira sahaedim, an investigation of the witnesses and the sofer to make sure they did their jobs properly, which the Chassam Sofer says requires a kabbalah edus in front of a Beis Din. You need a Beis Din to issue an official ma'isa Beis Din, a document that the parties will be able to take with them afterwards to prove that they are divorced, since the get itself is generally held by the Beis Din. So we spoke about many of those issues. So I want to speak about some of the other components of the get process and the various halakhic issues that are intertwined. So one is the question of who pays for the get, the schar ha-sofer. Who pays the sofer? Who has to pay for the writing materials of the get? The writing materials have to belong to the husband. This is exeris ha-kasav, v'nasav, v'kasav la-sefer krisus v'nasav v'yada. V'kasav v'nasav sounds like the husband has to write, the husband has to give, it has to be his stuff that's being given. So the Gemara, the Mishnah in Baba Basra, and the Gemara there, towards the end of Baba Basra, Dab Kav Samach Zayin, Kav Samach Ves, speaks about how we derive from these psukim that really the husband should have to pay for the schar ha-sofer. And yet, nonetheless, there was a takana that was made that is codified in the Shulchan Aruch, Siman Kav Chaf. It's discussed there in the Gemara in Baba Basra and Daf Kuf Samach Ches, discussed in the Gemara in Gittin Daf Chaf, that the wife pays for the schar ha-sofer. Why is this? So the Shulchan Aruch explains, takanas agunos, because of the takana of the agunos, that sometimes you're able to produce the husband that he'll agree that he's going to give the get, but he says, I don't want to pay for the get. So then if it turns out that he's not going to pay for the get, the wife is going to end up being an aguna. So Chazal were always concerned to see to it that a woman not be an aguna. So therefore, they made a takana. Netakana's aguna is tiknu kochavim she'isha titen schar ha-sofer v'iknu labal. That the woman would pay the schar ha-sofer. The problem is that if the wife pays for the schar of the sofer, pays for the payment for the writing materials and so forth, then it doesn't belong to the husband. And then there is no fulfillment of this notion of the cost of an asan, that it has to come from the husband. So therefore, the explanation explains the Gemara in Gittin and Daf Chof is that aknuye aknula, that the rabbis made a transaction that would become automatic effectively when the wife pays the money to the sofer, that even though she's paying for the materials, it's automatically transferred to the husband's possession so that it will be a kosher get. So that works according to the takana when it's the wife who pays the bill of the sofer, so to speak. Is it that we require the wife in every single case? Let's say the husband's willing to pay. So according to the Rambam, in fact, this is the takana to see to it that there not be any problems or machlokis regarding the payment for the get. So the Chazal just made a takana across the board that the wife always pays for the get. And the Rosh says no, that really the husband is the one who's supposed to pay. But the takana is that in the event that the husband refuses to pay and the wife says, okay, I'll take care of the bill, I'll hire the sofa and buy the materials, so then it's considered as if it is transferred. It is assigned over to the husband, so the get will be kosher. What ends up happening nowadays is that generally the cost of the get is split between the parties. It's split between the husband and the wife, but the sofer has in mind to transfer the writing materials for the get to the husband no matter what. And the one who really ends up paying the sofer for writing the get is the Beis Din. The Beis Din hires the sofer and the Beis Din pays the sofer. Let's say you'd have a case where neither the husband nor the wife would pay for the get. Let's say they can't afford to pay for the get. Let's say they said they would pay for the get, but they don't end up paying the money. It doesn't matter because the Beis Din is going to take care of the sofer anyway. And the sofer has in mind that he's going to give the writing materials as a matana to the husband. And my Rebbe Rav Shaftoshlita explains that, nowadays it's not so far-fetched to say that even in the event that, let's say, the sofer wouldn't end up getting paid, the husband won't pay and the wife won't pay, and the bezin says, oh, it turns out that we don't have any funds for you, so we're not able to pay you either, there's an assumption that there's a gemiras das on the part of the sofer that when he transfers the writing materials to the husband, they don't really cost so much. They're not so expensive. It's a quill. It's some ink. It's some paper, and they could be easily replaced. Therefore, the sofer always has in mind that he's going to give it as a matana to the baal. It could be it was more expensive in the days of old. So this was a bigger deal. Nonetheless, it is a discussion that you find in the Piskei Tshuva about what happens when neither the husband pays for it nor the wife, but you just have a third party. There's this organization called a get organization known as Kayoma, that they would always send out fundraising materials. The cost of the get is only $200, $300, would always go up, $400, whatever it is. If you pay this amount of money, so then you're going to enable a woman to receive a get and not to be an aguna. You'll enable a family to be able to take care of a get and not violate Kedushas Yisrael when they all get remarried and have children in the future. If there are people who would not otherwise do a get, if the finances weren't taken care of, and they would promote the notion that you could pay for somebody else's get. So there was a question. The Torah's Gittin, written by the Baal HaNesivos, suggested that Dafka Haisha, this is in source 3, quote of the Piskei Tshuva, Simen Kuf Chaf Sifal, Dafka Haisha Be'atzma Yecholi Tein Skara Sofer, that it's only the Takana of Chazal, that it's going the the payment for the writing materials and for the services of the Sofer is only going to be automatically transferred to the husband when it's the wife who pays for these services. But if it's somebody else, like let's say Kigon Abi Abalu Abi Isha, like the father of the husband and the father of the wife, then there has to be a very official transfer of the money that's being given over to the husband or the wife so that they could be the one paying for it, because there is no automatic transfer that it would be considered like it's going into their possession. And he goes so far as to say, if they would end up paying for it and it wouldn't be paid for by the husband or the wife, so then she wouldn't end up being migreshes. She wouldn't end up being divorced altogether. So the Minchas Yitzchak Dayan Weiss, who was the Dayan of the Eda Haredis, wrote a tshuva about this, because we don't find that Bati Din are so makbid about who ends up paying for the get. Sometimes maybe it'll be the parents of the wife who end up paying for the get. According to the Torah's Gittin, you have a serious question as to the validity of the get. If they're the ones who end up paying the bezin, and that's the source of where the money ends up going to the sofer. So there's a serious question whether it's or not it's a valid get. So Minchas Yitzchak gives a svara as to why he thinks that this should not be a problem. He says that maybe the only reason why a special takana had to be made in the case of when the wife pays for the get, because you might figure she's doing it for her own individual purposes, because she so badly needs the get. So she's not thinking that I'm buying this on behalf of my husband. I'm buying this on behalf of myself, and that would be a problem, because it's because of nothing. It has to come from the husband, not come from the wife. But if it's coming from a third party entirely, they don't need the get for themselves. So therefore, of course, they're not buying it for themselves. They're buying it for whoever needs it. And if the halacha is that it has to go to the husband, so obviously they're buying for the husband. Even if it's the parents of the wife, and they clearly are doing it because they want to help their daughter, and maybe they figure that they're purchasing all of this for the purpose of their daughter. So even so, it would then go to the possession of her daughter, and then the takana of chazal would kick in, that it would be transferred automatically from the wife to the husband. He also quotes the Tzemach Tzedek. The Tzemach Tzedek talks about this issue as well. And he says that this idea that the chazal said, aknuyeya aknila, that that it's considered as if it is transferred automatically to the husband, when the wife pays for it. So it's lab dafka when the wife pays for it. The standard regular case when the husband doesn't pay, so the wife is going to pay. But really, the takana was if anybody pays. And then he quotes a Ramban, Tzemach Tzedek, quoted by the Minchas Yitzchak, quoted a Ramban, who said that the entire takana only was relevant when you wouldn't have an actual handing over by the sofer of the writing materials to the husband. If you have an actual handing over, and this is part of every single get that we perform, you have a handing over by the sofer of the writing materials to the husband before he appoints the sofer to write the get. And before he appoints the witnesses to sign the get, the first order of business is we call up the husband and the sofer turns to him and says, I am hereby presenting to you these writing materials, the quill and the inkwell and the ink and the cloth, you know, all as an absolute gift. And then the husband picks it up and he then owns it afterwards. And the sofer agrees to provide the service to the husband in the course of this transaction. So if you have a physical transfer by the sofer to the husband of the writing materials, then for sure you don't have this problem altogether, according to the opinion of the Ramban. Sometimes you don't have an actual transfer by the sofer to the husband of the writing materials. Like, for example, if you have like a long distance appointment of the sofer that we have to do, let's say the husband is in some foreign country and there is no bezin in that foreign country, there's no sofer in that foreign country, and there are no edim to sign the get in that foreign country. We used to do this at the Bezin of America with anybody who got divorced in Uruguay. They didn't have a sofer in Uruguay, they didn't have edim in Uruguay, but they would have husbands and wives getting divorced. So they would do what's known as a kisru tenu, where the husband would make a verbal declaration in the presence of three rabbis there in Uruguay who didn't know how to write a get, but would say in their presence, I'm appointing the sofer in New York to write the get. I'm appointing two witnesses in New York to write the get. And that's considered to be good enough according to some poskim and not according to other poskim. But even the poskim say that's not good enough. Most of them agree that it would be good enough if there was a written appointment by the husband that actually gets sent directly to the sofer and the witnesses, in which the husband signs this written document saying, I'm hereby appointing this scribe and hereby appointing these witnesses. And then the document goes directly to the sofer and to the eder. So we would do both. We would do the verbal declaration. This is Maharam Mibrisk that's quoted by the Pesach Shuvah, that if you do both of these things, then it works according to all the Rishonim, the Ramban, the Ran, whoever says it doesn't work in one. In the verbal declaration doesn't work, says the written declaration works, and vice versa. So you have both this verbal declaration that the husband is appointing the sofer and these witnesses. So you have the written appointment of the sofer and the witnesses. And then we would write a get in New York on behalf of the husband. But obviously the sofer in that case couldn't physically present the writing materials to the husband. We just pick it up, you know, on behalf of the husband, acquire the writing materials, you know, say I'm acquiring the writing materials on his behalf. But you might not have the Milo of the Ramban in that case. But in most of the cases, you have this other advantage of the Ramban, that you have the actual transfer of the writing materials. And finally, says it's Tzemach Tzedek, if people are spending money, nobody is interested in throwing their money out the window. So let's say there wouldn't be any takana, that everything would automatically be transferred over to the husband's possession. The people who are paying the money want to do it what's known as the open hamawil. You want to do things in a way that works according to halakha. Most people are not so savvy when it comes to all of the intricacies of halakha. They say, we're going to spend the money, and you, the rabbis, you figure it out. If the money is meant to be transferred, that it's considered as if it belongs to the husband, and he's paying for the sofa, and he's paying for the sofa's materials. So, of course, that's what I have in mind. That's sort of an implied gemara that everybody would have. So be it as it may, this is a shaila that does arise, but you know the answer to the shaila is, that it's not something that we have to worry about because the maisa is considered as if it's all transferred into the husband's possession. So regardless of who is paying for the get, it's considered like the husband is really the one who's hiring the sofer, and certainly the sofer is presenting to the husband all of his writing materials for purposes of writing the get. We always have to make very clear that after the sofer presents the writing materials to the husband's not going to physically write the get himself. He's going to then hand back the writing materials to the sofer after he appoints him to write the get. So we always say to the husband, bear in mind that when you're handing over these writing materials to the sofer, you're not actually returning them to his ownership. You still own them. It's just that the scribe is going to write the get with your writing materials. So we're always 100% clear about that. I've seen certain misadrim that after that transaction takes place, they then turn to the husband and say, once the sofer actually has the writing materials back in his hands, they turn to the husband and say, so just to clarify, who do the writing materials belong to now? And then, of course, you know, he answers, the sofer. You know, I mean, no, but then that's a mistake. It doesn't belong to the sofer. It's supposed to belong to him. So it's better not to ask. It's understood that if you're very clear to the husband that you say the writing materials still belong to you, then, you know, then he gets it. He's supposed to get it. Yeah. That way, if he would say it, then you'd have to return it and do it again, or, you know, right, to make sure that it's 100% clear that he's not retransferring the materials to the sofer. Sometimes they just get confused. Yeah. Okay, then the next issue is that the husband and the wife walk in, you have to be able to identify them as the husband and the wife. You have to be able to know that they are who they're supposed to be. That's what the Shulchan Aruch says here in Siman Kuf Chav, that's source 5, Siman Kuf Chav, Siv Gimel. V'tzarech ha'hakir shem ha'ish ra'isha b'shem rabim. You have to recognize all of them. You have to know who they really are. You have to know what their names are to make sure that it's not some people who are tricking you and they're claiming to be the husband and the wife, not really the husband and the wife. Let's say a wife who really wants to get so badly, she brings in somebody else to pretend to be her husband. So, you know, you can't take any chances. You're supposed to identify them. And it used to be that the way that they would be identified is that they would bring in actual individuals who would be the official witnesses who would identify, this is the husband, this is the wife, and we know that they're married to each other. Nonetheless, the Gemara says, the Mishnah in Gittin and Samach Bava and Aleph says, if somebody is Hushlach Labor, somebody is Mushlach Labor, he's inside of a pit, and he is afraid that he's never going to get out and he'll never be discovered, and his wife is going to be an aguna. So he says, anybody who hears my voice, you know, should write a Gedli Ishti. Anyone who hears my voice should write a Gedli. So that's considered an appointment of an agent because he is circumscribing a certain population who he is appointing to write a get for his wife. And we say you could write a get under those circumstances, even though, and he just says what his name is. We don't recognize him. We don't even see him. We just hear a disembodied voice coming out of the pit. And yet that's considered to be good enough. So the halacha is, b'shasa sakana, somebody is in a dangerous situation. Kosum inosin av b'shem makirim, that's what's aboard here in the Shulchan Aruch, Simen Kuf Chav, Sif Gimel. So and it's based upon that sugyo, somebody who is inside of the pit and says that he wants to get rid into his wife, even though we don't necessarily recognize the person. So the Bach in the Chuvas Bach Chadashis Siman Sadi Beis, this is in source 6, also quoted by the Pesukei Tshuva and Siman Kuf Chav, says that this is not only true b'shasa sakana, when you have a situation where lots of people are dying in war and people are being thrown into pits and things of that variety as well. But he says, "Mikol makom near the kol hecha deika lamecha shiteshi baguna koyemeh k'shasa sakana dami." Whenever it's a situation that people, okay, they don't remember to bring their identification, but you know that if you send them out and say, "Come back tomorrow with your identification," you may never see the husband again, and this woman is going to be an aguna. So you write to get anyway. You write to get anyway. You take your chances because of the fact that if there's a chance that a woman's going to end up being an aguna, that's considered, says the Bach, like a shasa sakona. He was dealing with a situation even of an individual who was an ozev das. This is a person who was leaving the religion altogether, like an apostate type of situation where, you know, maybe you would be suspicious a little bit that the person's not telling at their real name, and maybe they're going to be a little bit dishonest because you have to write the names properly in the get. You have to do a very careful drisha v'chakiva. What's your name? What are your nicknames? What are your father's names and so forth? And you don't have any supporting documentation. Nonetheless, the halacha is that you take a person's, you know, word for it under those circumstances, so that the wife not end up being an aguna, because the case of the person who was mushlach labor, the person who was inside of the pit, says the Bach, we don't find that case of the person who's Mushlach Babur distinguishes between whether that individual was an upstanding member of the firm community or whether that person was an Ozei Das. The halakha simply was that you could write again under the circumstances. So Moshe Feinstein's policy was that this is something that was articulated by Rav Melech Schechter Zatzal, the father of Rav Herschel Schechter Shlita, because he worked very closely with Rav Moshe Feinstein when it came to matters of Gittin. His policy was that you didn't have to bring an individual, a witness, to identify yourself, to identify the husband, to identify the wife when they would come in to do a get. That sometimes it would be logistically difficult to coordinate. It's hard to accommodate everybody's schedules, you know, anyway. He would rely upon official governmental documentation. A person had a picture ID, they had a driver's license, they had a passport, they had, you know, some reliable form of identification. He held that was perfectly fine. And that's routinely what Bati Din rely upon nowadays. Most Bati Din, we tell people, bring picture ID with you. I really haven't had situations where people didn't have their picture ID. People always have, you know, a picture ID, a driver's license, something like that. So we're always able to identify them on that basis. That the Piskei Tshuva in Siman Kuf Mem Aleph Sifkatan Lamedes also quotes a Radbaz that says that even when they would produce actual witnesses, they wouldn't have to be kosher witnesses. It's not like this is a matter of edus. This is a matter that we call a giloi milsa. He quotes the Tshuva in the Daf Yinam. It's giloi milsa, that it's the sort of thing that, you know, will eventually identified. It's almost like a milsa David Liguye that you can see today. So you didn't identify them today. You can identify them tomorrow. This type of a thing where you don't necessarily, you don't need a full-fledged type of testimony. You just need some, you know, type of a confirmation of identity that can really be supplied by pretty much anybody under under the circumstances. Okay, the next piece that we touched upon a little bit is Hataras Nedarim Bitul Mudos. So we don't want the last thing in the world that a Beis Din wants to have to worry about is that it wasn't given with the complete free will of the husband, because as we discussed, that would cause a very serious question about the validity of the get, since one of the major criteria of a kosher get is that be given meritzono hatov of the husband. So therefore, we don't want that the husband is only giving a get because of the fact that he took a shvur, because of the fact that he took a neder. So we do hataras nedarim for every single get. You might say only do hataras nedarim if the husband says that he took a neder, he took a shvur, but maybe he took one and he forgot. So the Kavnaki says just at source 12, the Ravka the Milsa, just to be on the safe side. So we do hataras nedarim for everybody. Maybe there was a neder that he took that he can't give a get, so, or a shvur that he can't give a get, so we need to undo that shvur, or a shvur that he will give again. We're afraid that he's only giving the get because of the shvur. But the Tosfos in Arachin raises another issue, because sometimes you have to put the pressure on the husband, as we've mentioned, and require him to give a get for certain circumstances that even allow for a certain measure of a compulsion. And then the halakha is that kofin oso ashiyam arotza ani, that the Beis Din compels the husband to give the get until he cries uncle, until he says, Rotsani, yeah, I really want to give the get. And after he twisted his arm enough times, yeah, I really want to give the get. So the question is, what if it's a circumstance where the Beis Din is really beating him up because halakhically they're allowed to, whether literally or figuratively, and the Beis Din is putting a lot of pressure, and the husband knows that he's going to get a lot of pressure put on him, so he figures he'll go to some witnesses before and he'll do a Mesiras Modah. Sivas Mudah, very dangerous. I once came across this in my years in the Beis Din, not in a get, but in a contract. The person signed a certain contract, and he actually did a Mesiras Mudah before he signed the contract, that he felt the contractual terms were not really fair. So he got some witnesses together before he signed the contract and said, you should know that I'm doing this under duress, and I'm officially notifying you and broadcasting in front of you that the contract I'm going to sign later today is under duress. And the witnesses signed on this Mesiras Mudah. And then there was a din Torah over whether the contract was enforceable, whether he was bound by the terms. He says, I have a Mesiras Mudah. I said, I can't believe this thing. This guy actually did a Mesiras Mudah. It just blew my mind. But Schwartz was on the case too. Schwartz blew his mind. He couldn't believe it. This person, I did a Mesiras Mudah. Okay, so we had to figure out whether it meant anything. We said that. We couldn't believe that the witnesses, that he could find witnesses who actually agreed to sign on this Mesiras Mudah. Okay, then we have to figure out whether he was really coerced to that based on the Mesiras Mudah. But with a get, you really have to worry that the husband will appear before the Beis Din and he'll say, yeah, I did not say anything that could harm the validity of the get. I'm doing it of my own free will. But beforehand, he would come in front of some witnesses and say that everything that I'm going to say to the Beis Din later today is null and void because the get is really being given against my will. And then he'll produce this Mesiras Mudah signed by witnesses afterwards. So that's going to be a problem. So therefore, Tosfos says that since Haimai Demasa Mudah Gita Mudah Mudah, if a person would do something like that, it would create a problem with the get. So therefore, the minhag is Levatukum Mudah Mudah Dasamigom Mudah B'Shas Ksivas Geger B'Shas Anasina D'Chashinat Shevet Batal Oso. So therefore, we invalidate any kind of a such statement, any kind of such modah that the husband could have, you know, made beforehand. Let's say the husband says, yes, if I made a modah, then I invalidate any modah, any kind of statement that I issued in front of witnesses that I'm being coerced. I invalidate the statement. So it could be that the husband was more clever. He was like one step ahead. And he said to the witnesses, and not only am I, you know, going to be coerced, but I am going to say later today in front of the Bezdin that I invalidated any statement that would cause this get to become invalidated. And in front of you, I'm invalidating that invalidation of the invalidation at this point in time. So therefore, we say that we have him invalidate every single modai, the modai, the asumigo modai, every single invalidation of an invalidation of an invalidation to however many degrees that you could possibly take it. And he invalidates all of that so that he would not be able to possibly get afterwards. So this is a very important part of the get procedure because the mamish comes straight out of the Gemara, straight out of Tosfos. So we have to take care of all of these preliminaries before we even have the appointment of the scribe to write the get and the appointment of the witnesses to deliver the get. So let's say we've done all of that now, that we've had, he appointed the sofer to write the get. The sofer wrote the entire get, 12 lines, the matri of get, 12 lines, a gimel test. You want to know what a get says? It's really a very prosaic document. People are always so relieved when we tell them that there's nothing personal inside of the guy. Like they're afraid. We're going to have to like give all the grounds of divorce. You know, so-and-so is divorcing his wife. And the reason is because he feels that she did the following. No, we're not writing any of those things. And she really wanted the get for the following. None of that goes inside of the get. It's a Hebrew document written with Hebrew words, Aramaic words. And it says such and such a date here in Chicago, the city, which is right next to Lake Michigan. So-and-so, it's written in the first person. And hereby divorcing you, my wife, so-and-so. You are divorced from me. You are free and permissible to anyone. This is a document of divorce according to the laws of Moses in Israel. That's basically what the document says. But it says like these various things in many different ways. Like even the fact that it's taking place in Chicago. It says, I, so-and-so, who I'm standing right here in Chicago, I'm divorcing you, my wife, who is also standing right here in Chicago, which is the city which is right next to Lake Michigan, blah, 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 blah. And so it takes a lot of time and a lot of words to, you know, say all these things. So it really not so many words of substance in the get at the end of the day. But, you know, the get gets written and it gets signed by the witnesses. And then the husband picks up the get and he drops it into his wife's hands. And then in the presence of the witnesses, then she's thereby divorced. But the get has to be written very, very carefully. If there are any mistakes in the letters, some of the letters don't touch each other. There's a break in the letter or two letters touch each other. So that can invalidate the entire get. If it's not done properly, you miss a letter, you miss a word. So you have to be very, very careful in the writing of the get, especially in terms of the names, getting the names of the party straight. You write all the Hebrew names, their English names, the nicknames that they go by. We've had some very interesting nicknames over the years. And you have to transliterate, you know, the English names. You have to transliterate the nicknames. You have to identify the person's a Kohen or Levi, figure out, are they really sure they're a Kohen or Levi? Because if you're a Kohen or Levi and it turns out they're not Kohen or Levi, then it'll be no good. Do they really know their father's name? Because if you write the wrong name, so then it's not going to be good. And it's always better to make a mistake in omission than a mistake of commission. That's one of the major principles in Hilchos Gittin. Better to leave something out if you're not sure. The get will always be valid as long as you have, you know, some sort of appropriate name that the person goes by than to write an incorrect name. So you have to be very, very careful about all of that. That's, you know, a separate discussion. But now all is said and done. Very interesting cheirim. This is discussed by the Mordechai. This is source 13 on page 4. Cheirim the Rabbeinu Tam. We're familiar with some of the, some of the cheirim of the Rabbeinu Gershom. What's this cheirim the Rabbeinu Tam? Can hachekim Rabbeinu Tam miskim Rabbeinu Moshe Tamito? And there is an agreement about this cheirim by his Tamir Rabbeinu Moshe. V'kol ha-gedoylem and all the gedoylem. They made this giant gezeira b'knufya in front of like masses of rabbanim. Shelo yikra shum bar yisrael iro shum get hakanas tinoso. That nobody should cast aspersions on a get after the get was given. Nobody should look to try to find fault with respect to a get. That's the major reason why a get is never distributed to the parties. Because we're always afraid that if it's distributed to the parties, it's like a ksuba that you see on somebody's wall. People are going to like look at it and say, oh, hey, there's the wrong date in your ksuba. You know, it's never happened. Anybody who invites me over to their home, so they're in trouble because, you know, these things happen. It says your battery is running low, by the way, which probably means that I'm supposed to finish them. So Rabbeinu Tam said that there should be that he made a chayim together with his Talmid, that nobody's allowed to cast aspersions. So that's the reason why we don't even have the get in anybody's possession so that they can't find problems or fault with the get. Rabbeinu Tam actually says something interesting after, or the Mordechai says, when he quotes this chayim, says, Ramarim, Loma Lule Agzero. You know, people say Nishavis Garet. So he says, anybody who tries to figure out a way out, as they say, if not for the Gezerah, Yeshli Lahashiv. Boy, would I find problems with this get. Unfortunately, I can't say anything because of the gezeirah. But if I could say something, boy, is there a huge problem with this get. So he says that is a really, you know, wily and completely unacceptable and repugnant thing to do. And he says that anybody who would do that sort of thing, it should be Yani Yachim also, Yani Yinarenu Beso, Miyagiyal, Baal Shoresh, Baaretz Gizol, should be wiped off from the face of the earth. And the fact that we enacted this Kayam all together was because we knew that there are these deceitful people out there who are out to create problems with Gittin, and we want to put an end to that exercise and endeavor. It's because Adayom is there. We know that sometimes there'll be a get, and people will try to find fault with the get. So this is something which is completely looked down upon according to halacha and excoriated. So the Shulchan Aruch and the Seder again says that one of the last things that we do after a